Bill, I've spent the last few hours trying to understand what's happening tomorrow, because Donald Trump, there's no world in which Donald Trump, he doesn't like multilateral meetings because he likes to be able to bully people on their own. So the idea that you've got the head of NATO, the head of the EU, major prime ministers and presidents from Europe coming into the White House to basically, let's just be clear, I hope they're there to figure out a peace agreement, but they're basically there to say, you're not going to push Ukraine around. I think this is a fascinating development. I don't think it's one that the White House necessarily would have planned, but what do you make of it?
Well, I'm really glad that all these people are there, because we absolutely can't have a repeat of that unbelievably scandalous, terrible meeting that Donald Trump had with Vladimir Zelensky in the Oval Office, where he and J.D. Vance verbally and practically physically attacked Zelensky. We just can't have that. So the fact that they're showing up is very helpful. I think there's one thing that's very important that everybody needs to understand is that it kind of looks to me, and I think it looks to many others, like at the meeting in Alaska, none of us were present in their meeting, but it looks like Donald Trump has accepted some version of Putin's, quote, peace plan. And the purpose of this meeting was to then present it to Zelensky. And of course, the Vladimir Putin's proposal is a totally unacceptable proposal for Ukraine, for Europe, for just about anybody else. And Zelensky will have to be in a position to reject it. And so the fact that he's not going to then be in a position to reject it by himself, but be in a position to reject it with the collective voices of NATO, the European Union, the UK, et cetera, at least puts him on firmer ground to reject it, because that has to be where this thing is going.
I will say, though, Vladimir, at some point, there's a lot of firepower going to the White House tomorrow. Is there a world, because Steve Witkoff, who is apparently the president's negotiator for everything, he's gone to Russia 5 times to meet with Putin. Putin actually called him out by name to say he's welcome to keep coming, because meetings with a guy like Steve Witkoff are good for Putin. Nothing gets accomplished. As I said yesterday, it's a lot of shuttle and not very much diplomacy. But is there a world in which Witkoff says we are going to agree to give Ukraine Article 5-like protections without NATO membership? Sounds like it means in exchange for some territory. Is there a world in which that's viable and useful to Ukraine?
Well, first of all, we have to be really careful about, you know, putting any weight on deals that involve land swaps for anything else when people are dealing with dictators, aggressors, and bullies, like as Vladimir Putin is. Because, and again, I keep going back to the lessons of history. You know, the great 19th century Russian historian Vasily Kluchevsky once observed that history does not teach anyone anything, but it punishes those who fail to learn its lessons. Mm. Well, isn't the lesson of the 1938 Munich Agreement enough for today's world leaders? Adolf Hitler said that Sudetenland was his last territorial claim in Europe. And then after that, again, after that piece of paper that Neville Chamberlain waved, saying this is peace in our time, this was it. Europe was at peace. Everything was fine. Everything was secure. It was, I believe, just 11 months between the signing of the Munich Agreement and the start of World War II. You know, again, we are in the 21st century, not in the 17th, and we should not be talking about handing one country's territory to another. This is something that is in complete violation of international law as it stands. With an added irony is that this month, August, is the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Helsinki Final Act, when countries across Europe and North America, including the United States of America and the then Soviet Union, agreed that there should be no forceful change of borders on European territory by force. And yet that is essentially exactly what is being talked about. But also, if you want to specifically talk about security guarantees, let's not forget that there was already a document that provided.
They had one, yeah, the Munich, the Budapest Agreement.
To Ukraine. On the 5th of December, 1994, in Budapest, Hungary, several countries, including the United States of America and the United Kingdom, gave security assurances to Ukraine when it gave up its nuclear weapons in return for these international supposed guarantees. Well, what did these countries do when Vladimir Putin annexed Crimea in 2014, which was the first case when one European country forcibly seized territory from another since the end of the Second World War? Essentially, they did nothing. And I think the attitude of the Kremlin and the attitude of Vladimir Putin going into this whole process, they were really on display at that meeting in Anchorage when, well, first of all, just on the outward trappings. I mean, I'm sure you remember the pictures of Sergey Lavrov, Putin's foreign minister, arriving in Anchorage with a T-shirt saying USSR in it. Margarita Simonyan, who's head of the Kremlin propaganda network RT Russia Today, boasted, you know, tweeted in her social media that Russian state propagandists, the so-called journalists from Russian state media, while they were on a plane on the way to Alaska, they were served chicken Kiev for dinner. I mean, can you think of anything more brazen, anything more emboldened from these people? And also, it's that Putin did not consider it necessary to make any gestures of goodwill going into the meeting. He got it for nothing. There was no ceasefire, not even for a few days, not even a partial one. There was no release of any Ukrainian civilian captives, for example, or any Russian political prisoners who are sitting in jail because they opposed this war. There were three Nobel Peace Prize laureates who called on Putin in advance of this meeting as a gesture of goodwill to release some political prisoners, some Ukrainian civilian captives. Nothing of the sort has happened. You know, I've seen in some media, including American media, there were comparisons of the Anchorage meeting between Trump and Putin to the Reykjavik meeting in 1986 between Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev. Well, frankly, nothing could be further from the truth, because yes, Reagan still had to deal with the Soviets, but he did it with a position of strength and principle, and nothing could be more different from the current administration. You remember the condition that Ronald Reagan gave for even coming to Reykjavik to meet Gorbachev. He said the Soviets had to release Yuri Orlov, who was a leading dissident at the time, the founding chairman of the Moscow Helsinki Group, who spent years and years in the Gulag and was at the time in exile in eastern Siberia. Reagan said, I'm not even coming to Reykjavik unless Gorbachev releases Orlov. And guess what? He did release him. Yep. And Reagan met with Orlov first, and only then came to meet with a Soviet leader. Now, this is what the policy based on strength and principle is, and this has nothing to do with what we're seeing today.
Bill, when you were talking to American legislators about the Magnitsky Act, you not only met with, but had universal support almost from Democrats and Republicans. In fact, Republican support for this was very strong. The idea of Republicans' support for standing up in favor of human rights and against an adversarial Russia was very strong. Where is this gone? What has happened here that all of these things that Vladimir just describes happened in Anchorage on Friday, and not a peep from anyone about how we welcome this guy with a literal red carpet?
Yeah, well, you make a really good point. And in fact, I would argue that when I was pushing for the Magnitsky Act, the Republicans were more robust than the Democrats in being tough on Russia. And by the way, guess who one of my biggest allies was in the campaign for the Magnitsky Act? None other than, at the time, Senator Marco Rubio. He was the guy that we would go to when Putin would do bad stuff to get a backbone from the Senate. He was the guy who was the most hawkish when it came to all this Russian nastiness. And it's interesting, because I've been reading all the news very carefully, and a poll came out yesterday about the public opinion of Vladimir Putin, and about 85% of Republicans think he's a bad guy. I think it goes up to 92% for Democrats. And so it's not as if in America the public opinion is on Putin's side.
Right.
And in fact, a majority of Americans even support, both on the certainly on the Republican side and definitely on the Democrat side, more aid for Ukraine. And so what we're seeing right now is a foreign policy towards Russia that's being completely cooked up by Donald Trump himself. It doesn't reflect the public opinion of the Americans. It doesn't reflect the private opinions of any of these Republican senators. I can tell you that they're all trying to figure out how to maneuver in this world. But what's happening is that they're completely scared of crossing Donald Trump. And so we end up in a situation where none of the checks and balances are working. The entire political process is being driven by Donald Trump for reasons that are mysterious to anybody who's watching this. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any geopolitical sense. All America's allies are flying, dropping all their plans to fly to Washington to try to convince Trump to do the right thing. All Americans are on the side of the Ukrainians and against Vladimir Putin. And so what you have is the policy of one man, and he's trying to strong arm and gaslight everybody into believing that this meeting was a 10 out of 10, and this is the right approach, and that capitulation is the right strategy, and it's obviously not. And I can only hope that that he, as inconsistent as Trump has been in many other policies, that whatever he had decided to do in Anchorage, he'll change his mind on Monday, and we'll see something that's a lot more palatable to the world and to the American people when he meets with Zelensky and this group of international leaders.